Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Robert Lowell died in 1977 at the age of 60. He was a towering figure, physically big, but most significantly dominant in the world of letters. A two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, Lowell was America's most famous post-war poet. Born in Boston, many of his poems made reference to his deep New England roots. Here's Robert Lowell reading the opening lines of his poem, For the Union Dead.
The old South Boston Aquarium stands in a Sahara of snow now. Its broken windows are boarded. The bronze weather vane cod has lost half its scales. The airy tanks are dry.
Robert Lowell's poetry was wide-ranging. It dealt with the personal and the epic. It spoke of friendship and death, Boston and Maine, as well as the American Revolution and the Greek myths. And he wrote it all while suffering from extreme bipolar disorder. Kay Redfield Jamison has written a new biography of Lowell that explores the relationship between Lowell's art and his illness.
I think he's extraordinary, and I wanted to do some justice to him, I suppose, in that sense. Lowell handled a great deal of adversity, a great deal of suffering and terror. I think of going mad always, and he did it with a remarkable amount of courage, and no matter what happened to him, he remained courageous in the light of a great deal of darkness.
Kay Redfield Jamison knows this subject well. She's a professor of psychiatry and mood disorders at Johns Hopkins University. She also suffers from bipolar disorder herself and has written and lectured about it extensively. She'll talk about it tomorrow at the Nantucket Book Festival and about her new biography, which is called Robert Lowell, Setting the River on Fire, a Study of Genius, Mania, and Character, in which Jamison explores that link between Lowell's mania and his poetic creativity.
When you have that kind of genius hit by that kind of fiery, disinhibiting, energizing, reckless aspect of this illness, I think it loosened his thinking. One of the things I tried to write about is that mania hit this incredibly fertile man who lived in history, thought in metaphor, being swept over by a force that rearranges and changes and speeds up and causes to, you know, I think really vault over the usual rules of grammar.
Mm. That's a great description. I want to ask you about the subtitle of your book, Setting the River on Fire, which comes from a poem, a Robert Lowell poem called Reading Myself. And we actually have a recording of him reading it. So I want to play just the beginning of it where he makes reference to setting the river on fire.
Like thousands, I took just pride and more than just, struck matches that brought my blood to a boil. I memorized the tricks to set the river on fire. Somehow, never wrote something to go back to.
That's such a powerful poem that seems to really speak to this relationship between his illness and his poetry.
Yes, and I think also to his life in the sense that he, one of the things that's most striking, his daughter was kind enough to give me access to try and track down his medical and psychiatric records. And what is clear time and time again is his terror of becoming manic again. Which is true for anyone who's been manic, but particularly if you've been manic as often as Lowell was. And I think that setting fire was not a metaphor. These were things that were very real to him, and he continued to take chances in his poetry, and he continued to face down what I think in most people would be just insurmountable demons.
But that line in that poem where he says he struck matches that brought my blood to boil. What's he say? I mean, he's aware of the power of his mania within his poetry, isn't he?
He certainly is. And he said to his doctors, he had the least romantic notion of it. It was devastating to him. It was costly. When he was finally given lithium and it worked, he was eternally grateful for that. But he also said to his doctors, you know, if I could keep the mania under control and keep that fire, I would do.
Interesting.
You know, I would use it for my art.
I want to hear a little more of Robert Lowell's voice. Here he is reading Skunk Hour. This is from his collection of poems called Life Studies.
One dark night, my tutor Ford climbed the hill skull. I watched for love cars. Lights turned down, they lay together hull to hull where the graveyard shelves on the town. My mind's not right. A car radio bleats, love, oh careless love. I hear my ill spirit sob in each blood cell as if my hand were at its throat. I myself am hell. Nobody's here.
So in that poem, we hear him say, my mind's not right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, he wrote Life Studies when he was pretty much on the verge of being hospitalized for a psychotic breakdown, right?
Certainly, he wrote a lot of it in the 3, 4, or 5 months leading up to a series of hospitalizations. He was hospitalized 3 times in a row. He wrote really fast and with great passion. And he felt, and I think many people would agree, he did his best writing that he ever did.
When he was manic?
When he was beginning to get manic. And then when he went over the cusp is when he ended up in the hospital. And indeed, even in the hospital, he finally ended up at McLean in Boston. And at that time wrote a poem that became Waking in the Blue, a great poem about madness and uncertainty and the leveling, social and privileged leveling effects of madness.
Crows maunder on the petrified fairway. Absence. My heart grows tense as though a harpoon was sparring for the kill. This is the house for the mentally ill.
Wow, it's fascinating. You made the point of how difficult these manic episodes were for Lowell to deal with after the fact, because he'd remember everything about them, what he did, how he hurt people. And what would he do when he was manic that was so difficult for the people around him to deal with and for him to come to terms with after the fact?
Well, he did what people have been described as doing for 3,000 years. He did awful things. He was physically violent from time to time. He was cutting in his words, which in some ways were probably the most lasting effects on many of his friends, that he said things that were witheringly painful, caustic. Yeah. And that's what people do when they're manic. You know, I mean, one of the things I try and deal with in the book is, you know, how do you deal with the fact that somebody who, by everyone's account who knew Lowell, was a gentleman, soft-spoken, kind, generous, kind to his friends, to his students. And when he became manic, he was absolutely the opposite, as Jekyll and Hyde, completely. And how do you get around that? How do you understand that? He didn't ask for this illness. On the other hand, people who were exposed to it didn't ask to have that kind of unkindness either. So it was terrible things. He was unfaithful. One of the first signs of Lowell getting manic was that he would become involved sexually, romantically, with usually a young woman, and declare to the world that he was going to divorce his wife and marry this person. And then when he came down off the mania and became depressed, that all stopped and he went back to his marriage. But he did everything he could do to express remorse and to continue to live and face the next day.
You trace the origin of his illness back to his childhood. What did you find? I mean, what did a very young Robert Lowell, what was he dealing with? What did he know about his illness?
We know that bipolar illness is a hugely genetic illness. And so one of the things I did in the book was trace back several hundred years of mania and depression in the Lowell and Winslow and Spence and Trail family lines. As a child, he had this predisposition to volatility, to irrationality. And he was, you know, as his mother put it, who was less than a warm, cuddly soul. He was a difficult child. But he was also a deeply serious child. And he could stand back from who he was and see how difficult he was. At the time that Lowell was finally diagnosed, when he was in his late 20s, He actually got good medical care, such as it was. You know, lithium wasn't available, and the modern medications weren't available, but it was the same diagnosis that he got then that he carried for the rest of his life.
Mm. And as you said, he was eventually treated with lithium, which is often prescribed for people who suffer from bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. And it helped him, but did it help him for the long term? What was his experience with the treatment?
He felt that it had made his life possible, that his health and his ability to stay sane was that he hadn't known before. So he was very grateful to it. At some point, he started taking, I think he started feeling a bit manic, at least this is what his psychiatrist described. He started feeling manic, and he took way, way too much lithium. It's not an uncommon thing for patients to do, which is if you feel a bit manic, to start piling it on. Unfortunately, with lithium, it's a very dangerous thing to do, or it can be dangerous. And he got very, very sick and ended up in the hospital and delirious and toxic. He never quite got sorted out on his lithium level after that.
I've been close to people who suffer from bipolar disorder, and I saw the lithium work. I saw it prevent the mania. But in so doing it, I also saw mania, lithium, depression, deep depression, drop the lithium to try to get back to that good sort of pre-manic feeling, and then shoot past it and back up into mania. That's pretty common for people who suffer. Or how common is that for people who suffer from bipolar disorder?
Well, it's interesting. I think it depends to some extent on when you were first prescribed lithium. Hmm. I was prescribed lithium pretty early on, several years after Lowell was, but still reasonably early on in the treatment. As a result, I was kept at very high levels. And there's no question that there was a certain deadening, inability to think as quickly or intensely as I had done. But one of the things that happens is actually quite wonderful about medicine and science is that people learn and medicine changes. And people are kept now, and I'm kept now, at a much lower level. And I don't feel any of the side effects that I used to feel and none of the deadening. So
I'm happy to hear that. That's amazing news about lithium, to me anyway. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and one of the things that we know about lithium is that it is, you know, it's variable. This is a variable illness. And one of the things about Lowell is that he could express his emotions and his thinking so incredibly well in his prose and his poetry. And he could kind of describe what would happen to him when he got manic and then when he was well and when he was depressed. And I've used Lowell's work for many, many years in teaching residents at Johns Hopkins about mania and depression.
Well, as you made reference to, you suffered from a bipolar disorder, and you write so powerfully about the mania. You talk about that mania can fire ambition, steal the nerve, and give high wind to imagination. You know, can you talk a little bit about your own, how you've experienced this link between intellectual energy, creativity, and this illness?
Mania is an addictive state. It's hugely powerful, and in maybe half of people who get manic, hugely enjoyable on the way up for a while before it becomes a total nightmare. Mm-hmm. In those early phases, you know, for a lot of people, your ideas come much more quickly. You feel the importance of the ideas, whether they're important ideas or not or something else again, but you feel the importance of the idea. You want to share the idea. You want to convey it. You want to communicate it. So one of the things that you find very commonly is that patients will give you, you know, reams and reams of written material and underlined in different colors and with a sense of time urgency as well as fecundity. But the next mountain over, you find that actually this is not quite the brilliant thing you thought it was. It's sort of like all the albums you buy after hearing music when you have smoked some marijuana, you know, maybe that is, right, you know, that those albums don't sound quite so great in the cold light of day.
Right.
And so that's true with one's ideas, but it's also true that some of those ideas you can rope in and develop and do something with.
Interesting.
And it's mainly, it's an intoxicating state. It's a reckless state, as in the excerpt that you have from Lowell about setting the river on fire. It is a reckless state. It is bringing your blood to a boil. It's going along with this incredible ignition.
Final question about Robert Lowell. Mm-hmm. He was a prodigiously productive poet. He's remembered as one of America's leading men of letters, despite his mental mm-hmm. illness. Is it fair to say maybe even because of his illness?
I think one of the reasons I subtitled my book, that it was a study of not only genius and mania, but also of character, is that it's what one does with it. I mean, everyone who knew Lowell thought he was a genius, and uniquely so. These were people who did not give out that title easily. He had an incredibly three-dimensional chess-playing mind and a remarkable poetry. I mean, I think his poetry is staggeringly original. And just it came across the American scene in literature and just transformed it. It really made a huge difference. And I don't think you see that very often. And I think one of the many wonderful things about Lowell is that combination of genius and how he took the disease that brought him to his knees and used it, but then brought this enormous will and willpower and discipline and courage to both writing and living. And to me, I don't know anyone like it. And I've been fortunate since I was 17 to have him in my life as an exemplar. And, I think we don't have enough exemplars in this day and age.
Well, Kay Redfield Jamison, thank you for this. Thank you so much.
Not at all. Thank you.
That's Kay Redfield Jamison. She's author of Robert Lowell, Setting the River on Fire, a study of genius, mania, and character. And she'll be speaking at the Nantucket Book Festival tomorrow. You can find more information about that at radioboston.org. Kay Redfield Jamison, thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Join us again on Monday. This is Radio Boston.